try and get paid to do something that you love so much that you would pay to do it if even if you weren't being paid. And number two, this is not necessary, but it's like kind of like icing on the cake, is try and do something that can make a positive difference in people's lives.
Thanks for subscribing to the ZonCon podcast, the podcast all about Amazon conversations. These are the tips and tricks to become an Amazon millionaire. Here is your host, Andrew Erickson. He is all things Amazon, and so is this podcast. Let's have an Amazon conversation.
Hey guys, welcome back to the ZonCon podcast. This is Andrew Erickson, your host as always. I am very excited to be here today with Bradley Sutton, the host of the Serious Sellers podcast from Helium 10. Hey, Bradley.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. And you're like my next door neighbor, right?
Yeah, I'm here in San Marcos, which is, I actually don't know what part of San Diego you're in, but wherever it is, it can't be more than 40 minutes away from me.
Yep. I'm in the North Park. So it's kind of like San Diego has a big Central Park, Balboa, and we're just north of that park. So we're sort of downtown-ish.
Okay. I know exactly where that's at. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I like to say the Serious Sellers podcast is one of my most favorite podcasts. It is the best one in the space. And, you know, there is this poll that we did, this kind of competition for podcasts. It was the Amazon Seller Community podcast. Was it the Seller Poll? I think it was called Seller Poll. Sellerpoll.com. And you guys won number one. We won number two. So now I like to call myself, I like to say, like, we're number two. We're number two. And now we got Mr. Number One right here, Bradley.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Awesome, Bradley. Well, I wanted to know a little more about you. So I hear lots of little tidbits here and there on Bradley's story. But why don't you tell me a little bit of your origin and kind of like your before Amazon, or your before Amazon, before Helium 10 life?
Yeah, you remember those Dos Equis commercials of the most interesting guy who's like, I say, well, I'm the second most interesting guy out there, because I just have a wide history. You know, I used to be a sumo wrestler.
Oh,
amateur
cool.
Sumo wrestler, even, you know, for a few years. I was a Zumba fitness instructor. I traveled the world doing that and had a YouTube channel with tens of millions of views from Zumba. And here in San Diego, I had pet goats and pigs and things like that, which is not exactly normal for San Diego. So I'm just a weird all around person. But I kind of got into e-commerce pretty early on, about 20, maybe like 23 years ago, is I was running this company that was kind of like on the coattails of the whole Fast and Furious craze that was happening when that first movie came out. But it was a company that was based in Korea, and we focused in on Korean cars. So I was like 19, 20 years old, and was trying to do this as a hobby. But then I was like, hey, there's an opportunity here. So I was like, let me run your website and run a warehouse out here. So, you know, I was 19, 20 and was already, you know, running this business that was grossing over $1 million a year. And that was like my first taste of e-commerce. And ever since then, I haven't always been in e-commerce, but because of that early exposure to it, I always knew the strength of e-commerce and the potential. And so I was never too far away from the e-commerce world.
Wow, that's amazing. So 19, you started your first running someone else's website, kind of your first entry into e-commerce?
Yeah. My first. I mean, e-commerce wasn't even that big, you know, in the late 90s, you know, that much yet. So it was kind of new, you know, like, I don't even think there was a such thing as Shopify. It was just a regular .com website that we coded in HTML and just had a simple shopping cart and stuff like that. But it was a great business, and it was fun. And that's something that's always been part of my motivation, is to make sure I have fun with whatever I'm doing.
Okay, but we can't zoom past the sumo wrestler and the goat training though. Let's roll back to that. So what's Bradley the sumo wrestler? Did you have like a stage name or something?
No, it was just, you know, it's I was
the into smasher.
I should have, but in amateur sumo wrestling, we didn't have all that fancy stuff here. It was just mainly like a lot of local competitions, and then you try and qualify for the world championships, and there's the US championships, and there's weight classes too. In amateur sumo, it's not that everybody is as huge as they can be. It's kind of like boxing where you're trying to be at the very top weight. And like, it was crazy. You know, you think like, wait, a sumo wrestler losing weight, but you know, we would try and cut like 15 pounds right before the competition. It was that whole thing. So I got into it because I've loved sumo wrestling my whole life. When I was younger, I lived 3 years in Japan, and I just liked sumo for whatever reason. And so then when I found out that in California, there were some clubs that did it, and there was actually a whole amateur sumo wrestling world, I totally like immersed myself into that.
And the sumo training was in Japan or was it here in California?
It was here in California. Was
oh, where wow. Was is there still like a thriving amateur community? Oh, yeah. Can I go see a sumo wrestle like today?
Yeah, they do. You know, you can even go to the practices. One of the my old club that I used to go to, they're in Santa Monica. I think it's usasumo.com or something like that is their website. But I linked up with them. And because of that, it's not normal for an American person to be a sumo wrestler. So then like MTV True Life even did like, you know, had me in a documentary because of that. And we would work on different shows like, what was it? The Memoirs of a Geisha, Ocean's 13. There was always sumo scenes. Like the ones who coordinated that, those things were from our club. So I was all about the sumo life, you know, back in my 20s.
Wow, that's awesome. So you're running e-commerce website and sumo wrestling. So you are right, man. You need like a nice beard and drinking Dos Equis and you will be truly the most interesting man.
Yes. I may not always drink beer, but when I do, it's after a sumo match or something. Yeah.
That's good. So what's up with this goat training?
Yeah, well, I just like to do different things. And so, you know, everybody always has, you know, a dog or a cat or whatever. So I was like, you know what? I have a nice sized property over here in San Marcos. You know, we're kind of in a somewhat rural area, if there's a such thing here in San Diego, but I got three quarters of an acre.
California, sure.
Yeah. So I was like, you know what? Let me fence off this area. Sure, I'll get a dog, but let me raise some goats out here and let me have some pigs and stuff like that. So I did. So we had goats and pigs for a while, but then I started, you know, I like to travel too. And that was just kind of a hassle to have somebody come to the house and you know, every day to feed them and watch them and stuff. So like I eventually sold them off.
You know, it's funny. I used to live in Boise, Idaho, and there's a bunch of like kind of they call them gentleman farmers or hobby farmers out there. And there's a guy who had fainting goats. And I told him, oh my God, you have to let me come see your fainting goats. So I went over there.
As in they faint?
Have you not seen this?
No, I don't know.
Oh my God. I don't know what that is. Okay. Everybody right now, stop. Go to YouTube. And type in fainting goats. Fainting as in like the fall asleep fainting. Oh, there's this goat species or breed or something where it when you scare them, their legs freeze and lock up. And because they're running and their legs freeze, they flip over on their back. And it's honestly the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Now I would still have goats if those are the kinds that I got.
They're real too. I thought maybe it was some sort of like weird YouTube like hoax video. They are completely real. I saw a bunch of them in Idaho. And yes, they do faint when you scare them. So, oh man, that's funny.
Love it.
Let's go. Okay, Zumba. What's the deal with Zumba? You got goats, you got sumo.
It was actually a transition. Because the sumo, I was doing it for a while, but then I was maintaining my weight pretty heavy. It's actually ironic because I'm literally at my old sumo weight because I've gained so much weight during COVID. But at the time, you know, like I was younger, so it was bad. It was worse for me to be at that weight. They're like, you're a young guy. Why are you not taking care of yourself? I'm like, well, I'm trying to keep my weight up for sumo. You know, not many doctors understood that. But anyways, they're like, hey, your good cholesterol is low. Your bad cholesterol is high. You need to do some lifestyle changes. So I was like, okay, let me try and get in shape. I started going to the gym. I was like, this is the most boring thing in the world. Like, you know, a treadmill, this is dumb. You know, there's got to be a better way. And I just remember, you know, Zumba in those days wasn't a household name. So I didn't even know what the word meant. I was like, what is this Zumba thing? I was at 24-Hour Fitness here in San Marcos. I was like, what is this Zumba thing? So I looked at the schedule. I was like, okay, let me just check out one of these classes. I was like, well, this is pretty cool. It's like, you know, I never took dancing in my life. You know, I wasn't a dancer or anything, but I like listening to Spanish music and world music. And I like dancing just by myself in front of a closet or something like that, you know? But I got in there. I was like the only dude out of like, you know, 50 people in there. But I'm like, you know, I can roll with this. This is kind of fun. And I just started doing it. I was like, this is actually fun. Like I'm losing weight. I'm getting healthy, but this is actually fun too. So I heard about this Zumba convention that was going to be in Orlando. And it was like, you know, 7,000 Zumba instructors come together and party for like a week from all over the world. I'm like, how do I, you know, that's awesome. Like I'm not a Zumba instructor, but that sounds like fun. They're like, no, you got to be a Zumba instructor to do it. So I was like, okay, fine. Let me get certified to become a teacher just so I can go to this convention. But then I was like, you know what? Let me just give this a try. And then I just fell in love with teaching it. And I fell in love with teaching it. And I was like, I always have try and think about marketing. And so the way I learned how to be a good Zumba instructor was watching YouTube videos from like these kind of like YouTube Zumba influencers. But then I was thinking about, I was like, you know what? I would never these people are great. They're amazing. But if I ever saw them at the Zumba convention, like I probably wouldn't even recognize them. Like there was nothing notable about them. They're not very memorable. You know, like I wouldn't even distinguish them. So I was like, let me make a name. How do I make a name for myself? You know, like, and maybe I could leverage this for something. And so I made up this character called Crazy Sock TV. And basically that was like the name of my channel. And like this persona I would have when I taught classes, then I would like take these crazy sock that's a million different colors. And then one of them, I would cut the bottom and put it on one of my arms and then one on my leg. So like one leg didn't have a sock and then one arm had a sock. And I would always wear these like crazy bodacious colors. And then I started making videos and it just really caught on. And then sure enough, like everybody, nobody knew my name, you know, but they knew, oh, that's the crazy sock guy. And so then when that happened, I just started getting invited. I was flown out all over the world to come to give master classes, and Zumba used me in their DVDs. Like this former sumo wrestler loses 70. Like I lost 70 pounds in 4 months doing Zumba, by the way, from my sumo day. So this Zumba, you know, this sumo wrestler lost all this weight. And now he's a Zumba instructor. So that it was just a crazy time to go from sumo wrestling to Zumba dancing.
Wow, man. Okay, you are living up to your reputation, most interesting man, or second most interesting man in the world.
There you go.
So now you're a YouTube sensation, you're Mr. Crazy Sock Man, and you are generally doing kind of, I guess, sort of you're always doing marketing online then, right? If you're doing YouTube and everything else. Mm-hmm. How does that pivot into Helium 10 and kind of getting involved in the Amazon world?
Yeah, so I mean, after that, I was still doing Zumba. It never was like my main or even a significant part of my income. It was more like for fun. So I always had different jobs and things like that at the same time. And a few years I was in the corporate world in marketing. I worked for a food company out here. And then I would still work with those original Korean guys that had started that car parts business. And they had gotten into Amazon a little bit, but just they had no idea what they were doing. They just kind of lucked into it like a lot of people did in 2014 and 2015. They were even doing the cliche phone cases. And it was crazy. They had ridiculous success, like selling thousands of units a day. And literally they didn't know what they were doing. And obviously me much less, is because I was just kind of like the person who was providing the warehouse and logistics help and support and stuff. And so they were doing really well. And I was part of that company. I was a part owner in there. But what happened was, you know, now all of a sudden people who knew what they were doing caught on to the luck that these guys got into it, and they just did it a lot better. And then, you know, since their sales just kept going down and down and down and down and down. And then eventually I was just like, you know, I'd like to go ahead and sell my part of this company because I don't see this as going very far. And they never even taught me too much about Amazon. Like I just knew how to do FBA shipments and stuff like that, because that was all they let me do in the company. But I could see even then, this is like, I don't know, 2015, 2016, I could see, you know, like this Amazon thing is for real. Like this is, these guys don't know what they're doing, but man, I could see the potential of what it could be. So then for the next few months after I left those guys, I just dedicated myself to like taking courses and getting in masterminds and going to conferences and then just studying everything I could. And I was like, wow, yeah, this is amazing what the world of Amazon is. And then instead of starting my own private label business, what I just was going to do just to get some experience was, I was like, you know what, let me try and be a consultant. You know, I'm pretty smart in this. Like I just really learned about all this stuff as much as possible. Like I'm sure I know more than most people. So I went back to those guys. I was like, all right, hey, you know, you guys really don't know what you're doing. Why don't you hire me just as a consultant and let me show you guys what you've been missing out on all these years. And so I started with there and they had gotten a lot of clients. And so I just started launching hundreds of products, you know, for them. And then I would just by word of mouth get a lot of other business from different clients. And I was even working full time for some large companies out here, you know, kind of like managing their Amazon business. And so that was kind of like how I got close to full time doing Amazon. This was like 2016, 2017.
Wow. And so you learned all these things about how to sell on Amazon, but did you ever start your own private label?
No, not until like last year, where I still technically haven't. Like what happened was in the last couple of years, I came to a realization. I was like, you know what? I'm not doing as much, you know, I'm not doing the consulting work anymore. I'm like 100% Helium 10. And so if I stay out of the game, as it were, my knowledge is pretty much useless after 3 months. You know, things change so much on Amazon. So I was like, we did this Project X case study, you know, from Helium 10. And I was like, wow, you know, I learned so much from there. You know what? And then I was in charge of that account as if it were my own, even though I'm not getting any profits or anything from it. I was like, this is still not enough. So what I did was I was like, hey, you know, got with some friends and some family members. I was like, hey, let me, you know, why don't you go ahead and start your own Amazon account and let me help you out a little bit. I have like 5-10 hours a week I can spare. I would love to be able to just like run case studies on your accounts and launch my own products without having to ask Helium 10 for money. Like, you know, the Project X thing, Helium 10 paid for all that. And they put the money in and they get all the money, you know, from it. So I was like, let me do my own risk. And so like over the last year and a half, I've launched, you know, about 60 products now on my own. And I'm doing about $1,200,000 in gross sales on that. But before then, before I worked at Helium 10, I never launched one product for myself. Every single one of those 400 I did was always for somebody else or for a company that I was working for.
Wow. So you're up at a million and change now then?
Yeah. With your new products. About a million and change. Like I would say maybe $750,000 is from private label. And then I did another about $500,000 doing some different case studies I was working on, like drop shipping. Like I wanted to try the drop shipping model to see what drop shippers go through. And I wanted to do the wholesale model and stuff like that. So I don't make too much money off of it just because I waste a lot of money because it's more for experimentation purposes. Like I just like, let me just try this random crazy PPC idea I heard. And so I'll lose a lot of money, but then maybe another one I'll make a lot of money. So like, I'm probably not really making that much money. You know, so somebody might say, well, if you're doing that in 5 hours a week of time, like, you know, why are you still working for Helium 10? Well, I'm not doing it really to make profit. I'm doing it just to keep my knowledge up and it's fun. And like I said, you know, I like doing things that are fun.
That's fun. Yep. I love it. That's great. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Project X? That's something you've talked about on the Serious Sellers podcast quite a bit, but why don't you give us a little intro, kind of like the 1 minute intro, and then kind of tell us the whole project.
Yeah. So Project X was this case study that we did. It was originally the idea of Manny Coates, you know, the founder of Helium 10. He's just like, you know, why don't you guys just show the average Joe or average Sally that you don't necessarily need $30,000 to get started on Amazon. You don't need some like super secret ninja hacks to have success, but find somebody out there that you can do this project with. So I deal with Tim Jordan, who you know, he's not a Helium 10 employee or anything, but he was, you know, respected in the game as far as product research and things. And we're like, hey, let's just show people, you know, the A to Z of how you can start from nothing and take a product or two from zero to hero. And so that was kind of like the concept behind it.
Nice. And that's a good point. There's a lot of little ninja hacks and tips and tricks and stuff like that. And we talk about those things all the time on this podcast. But, you know, honestly, some of those things are a bit of a distraction because there isn't really just the one thing that's going to solve your issue and the one thing that's going to make you grow your business that much quicker and the one thing that's going to let you leave your day job to do this full-time entrepreneurial thing. It's really a combination of, I mean, it's, a lot of those things add up to a large amount, but it's really kind of coming in and running a proper business and building, you know, mission statement and getting employees and kind of building up a real business is really how these things work. So I love that you kind of touched on the fact that like, it's not just the one hack to win, you know? So you started up this Project X. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then how'd you source a product and how'd you kind of pick the product you wanted and how'd you source it?
Yeah. We wanted to make sure it was real, you know, too. Like if we did something wrong, like we were going to show it. And originally we had picked 5 products and actually 3 of them turned out to be not good. You know, one of them, it was Amazon changed a regulation, so we couldn't go through with it. Another one was like, you know what, this is not, we thought it was going to be great, but we saw these things that were like, you know what, you need to slow your roll. Let's just cancel it. And so we actually just ended up with 2 products. And, you know, I think it's important that people understand sometimes if people's only exposure to the Amazon world is the Lamborghini influencers or ads that people see, sometimes people have the wrong conception of what Amazon is. And they think it's all rainbows and unicorns and laptop lifestyle. And sure, you know, it could end up being in that, but that's the exception, not the rule. So we wanted to be really transparent with the whole process. And so we ended up finding a couple products and not a part of it. You know, one of them, we use Helium 10. The other one, we didn't even use Helium 10. You know, Tim Jordan had these cool methods of finding product opportunity on other websites. Like I know you've talked about before, Etsy and Pinterest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we found a coffin shelf and a wooden egg tray, you know, like the most random things that you would think about. And this is a perfect example for people out there who are just can't really understand the potential of Amazon. We've got this small shelf that's shaped like a coffin, which I, in the beginning, can't even understand why one person would want it. And in the last year, you know, we've sold, I don't know, like 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 of these units, you know, 20, 30, 40 a day sometimes of these little shelves. And I'm just like sitting here thinking like there's literally 8,000 houses in the United States where on somebody's wall or on a desk, like the one thing that they thought they needed was a shelf that's shaped like a coffin. We pay $4 for this thing and we sell it for $32. It's like, guys, you know, Amazon is amazing what you can do on this platform.
Yes, exactly. I love that. And the scalability is incredible. And of course, that, like they say, the riches are in the niches. So you don't have to sell 3 million cans of Coca-Cola, right? But that's not a niche. That's kind of like a broad audience.
Yeah.
What you want to do is find a very passionate, very involved community and get in on that community, like maybe the Zumba community that doesn't have like a great kind of like charismatic person to lead that community. You want to get in there and get involved and get into that audience and kind of figure out what those people want. And of course, there's these small niches of, I guess, I don't know who it is, like kind of a goth wood lovers.
Yeah.
who buys wooden coffin shelves, right?
Yeah.
So that's the thing, is identifying these niches. So I want to roll back a little bit, Bradley. You said that you picked five, but three kind of were duds, and one was a regulation issue. But the other two, what were the issues?
Well, one of them was they kind of failed in our validation, you know, stages. And one of them, it looked like it was super, super popular, but with hardly any competition. And this is like years ago. So it was like the burrito blanket that now is kind of cliche. But we were just like, I mean, there was nobody on Amazon hardly who had it. Like there was like two people or three people at the time. So we're like, wow, this is exactly what we're looking for. You know, there's super high demand. You know, we could see the search volume and there's only a couple listings on there and they had pretty crappy listings. So we're like, wow, this is the definition of opportunity. But when we went around to starting to try and find a factory to import it, because we were like all ready to go, we saw on Alibaba.com that there was like pages and pages of the exact same product everywhere. And so what we were like, you know what? Yeah, maybe it's not saturated on Amazon right now, but if you see something like this where it's saturated on Alibaba.com, guess what? That probably means it's about 2-3 months away from being saturated on Amazon. They just haven't gotten there yet. So we're like, you know what? Instead of taking the risk, we are just gonna not do this. And on the other one, like it still might have been an opportunity. I forgot exactly what it was. It was something about like garden seeds or something. But the main keyword for the product was something like baby shower gifts or something that product was getting their sales from. And so we were like, hey, this is super unique. They're like the only seller of it. But the reason why we didn't go through with that was because to us, it was too much of a risk, because we're like, there could be something happening here where this product is getting all these sales because of some like big, maybe social media campaign, or maybe they went viral somewhere else and they might not be getting their sales from just this one keyword. So if we were to go about it, you know, we don't have some big social media audience. We would have to be initially getting our sales from this keyword. And we're just like, it's too much of a risk. And we want to show people that because you could get super excited about some niche or something and everything looks good. But if there are warning signs, you know, don't feel bad or don't feel that you're a failure. If you say, you know what, I'm gonna take a step back and I'm not going to do this, because, you know, you got to make the right decisions when you're talking about Amazon, because you could end up losing some money if you go all in this niche that really the opportunity is not there.
Yeah, that's great. That's good to look out for, looking for those saturated niches. And another thing too, to kind of go off of that, is patents are a big thing to watch out for. So found, this is for a friend, I was trying to help him find a product, and I found this little thing that glues the back of your phone that pops out, kind of, it's a pop socket, it's a brand name, right? And I looked at it, and I'm like, oh my God, these guys are selling 30,000, like 30,000 units per month. And they're just on Amazon, they're doing a cumulative $250,000, $500,000 in revenue monthly. Yep. And I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. And we got a quote from Alibaba, and they were like 80 cents each. And they're, you know, selling, you know, they're small, so the shipping's really, really cheap. And I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. Oh wow, there's only like three people who just barely started selling this thing. I thought, wow, this is incredible. We found like a gold mine right here. And then I thought, seems a little too good to be true, right? And of course, you know what the issue is with a pop socket, right?
Yep.
There's a a lot of patents on it. And yep. There's a whole, so PopSocket.com has this whole tab on their site where they talk about how they love suing the pants off of anybody who comes anywhere near their intellectual property.
Yeah.
So if you are looking at a product that looks really, really good and there's not a lot of competition, double check the listing for a patent.
Yep.
Double check, just Google the brand name and the and patent or the keyword in patent and see if you can find something. You can go onto Google USPTO.gov and they'll tell you too. And also, if you still don't find it and you're still a little worried, you can go onto Fiverr and get a search there. And it's like $50. And they do a really good job of looking for patents for you.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I've interviewed on the podcast too. You know, I know you know him very well, you know, Rich Goldstein. And it's something that a lot of people are kind of like overlook, you know, when they're doing their product research. And it's something that's important because you could, you know, once you cut that PO, you know, and the product's on the water and then it arrives to you and then all of a sudden it's patented. It's not like factory, can you please give me my money back? No, it's like, you pay me. You're supposed to do your own due diligence. You know, that's on you, you know, so you got to do this homework before for sure.
Exactly. So Bradley, I want to know a little bit more about Helium 10.
Sure.
I think probably everyone in the space knows this, but Helium 10, in case somebody doesn't know this, is a kind of the basically one-stop shop for software for Amazon sellers, right? Is that kind of a good little tagline for you guys?
Yeah, trying to be the most extensive suite of tools for Amazon sellers, you know, regardless of any level. You know, we have tons of people who don't even sell on Amazon, who use Helium 10 just so they can get the education side and learn how to sell on Amazon. We've got billion-dollar companies like Spanx and Lego and Procter & Gamble who use Helium 10. So, like, regardless of where you fit on that spectrum, we've got something for you.
Awesome. Yeah, I love it. I've been using it for years and years. And yeah, it's absolutely my favorite tool. And I like to say, I don't really use Helium 10. I live and breathe Helium 10 because I use X-Ray, which is the little thing that shows you revenue and stuff. I use that like absolutely every single day when I'm just kind of looking for products and looking at competition and stuff like that. So I want to know a little bit about the origin story of Helium 10. Like, who started it and why, and kind of like, how has it grown to the point where it is now?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's funny because, you know, I have a podcast now, obviously, and we're on a podcast, you and I right now. And Helium 10 got its origins from a podcast. So Manny Coates and Guillermo Puyol, the founders of Helium 10, they had started to sell on Amazon. They had been, you know, working in developing apps for software apps and games and things like that, you know, for iPhones and things like that. And then they're like, you know, let's just start selling on Amazon. And Manny was like, you know what, let me start a podcast to document my journey. And that was kind of like the godfather of all podcasts in the Amazon space, the AMPM podcast. And so how that started was, he was like, let me just start this podcast, document my journey selling on Amazon. And then since he had experience, you know, developing software, he noticed as he started selling on Amazon, he's like, man, there's some things that I need, you know, I need to be able to run my business better. You know what? I want to grow this podcast. So I'm just going to like make one of these tools that I'm developing for myself, just like available out there and maybe use it as a lead magnet just so I can get more subscribers to the podcast. And actually that very first tool was what is now known as Scribbles. You know, that was our listing optimization tool. And so he just put it out there on one of his episodes, and that episode still is out there. He's just like, all right, guys, hey, I got something new. It was actually how, you know, it wasn't called Helium 10. It was just actually housed on the AMPM podcast website. And the response was so great. He knew instantly. He's one of the most savvy business minds I've ever met in my life. But he's like, whoa, wait a minute. There's something here. There is a big, humongous hunger for tools, it seems, for Amazon sellers. So then he was like, you know what? Let me go ahead and switch my focus. I'm still going to run the podcast, but he's like, the Amazon sellers out there need, you know, tools. So he started building a team around developing, you know, tools for Amazon sellers. And then eventually got to the point where he's like, you know what? I'm going to transfer my business away. Because back in those days, you know, like 2017 and stuff, people had this idea since, you know, there wasn't really many mainstream software tools, that if you had a software tool company and you were or are an Amazon seller, you're using your customers' data in order to increase your own business. So what he did was he actually stopped selling on Amazon like in 2017 around there and transferred his business to his brother. And his brother took over his seven-figure business. And then he just fully concentrated on the software. And then, yeah, the rest is history. We just grew into this, you know, humongous company. We just hit our 1 millionth user that we've had since the beginning a couple of weeks ago. It's just crazy to see the growth at this company.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love that. And he moved, he used to be in Southern California with us, but he moved out to Austin, right?
Yep. He actually, even before I met him, he actually lived here in San Marcos, which I didn't know. at the time because I didn't know him in those days. But then, yeah, he was living in Orange County. That was why we had our headquarters over there in Orange County in Irvine. And then he moved to Austin a couple years ago.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. I love that. I love hearing the entrepreneurial journey. I love hearing the stories like that. And for those of you who haven't used Helium 10, I do highly suggest it. We do have a coupon code, lifetime 10% off, ZONCON. That's just six letters, ZONCON. You can use that. You can download that. Gives you 10% off for life. Or you can do 50% off too. ZONCON 10 for 10% off forever. Or ZONCON 50 for 50% off your first month if you just want to try it out. Yep. Now, jumping into the entrepreneurial journey, we heard about Manny Coates. We heard of your story, Bradley, and I want to know a little bit about your why. I love understanding, like, what's the emotion? Why do you do the things you do? Why are you in this e-com space, and why are you working for Helium 10, and why aren't you still Zumba instructing?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I wish I was Zumba instructing, but yeah. I actually tore my Achilles a couple years ago playing basketball and never got back to doing Zumba. I'm fairly healed now, but I was away from it for too long, and that was the time I really started digging into Helium 10 that I just don't have the time. But anyways, for me, the ideal occupation for anybody, or at least for me, I don't want to speak for anybody, but for me, it consists of a few things. It's number one, is it something that I love doing so much that I did or would pay to do it, even if I wasn't being paid to do it? Because if you think about that, 98% of people probably wouldn't say that. You know, anybody who works as an accountant, or I work in a bank, like, all right, well, your accounting firm is now no longer going to pay you $60,000 a year. Do you love doing what you do so much that you're going to pay to do it? So that's number one. Like, can I say yes to that question? And then number two is, like, is it something that is, you know, I don't want to sound like, you know, corny or something, but it's kind of like my making the world a greater place scenario. Like, are you helping people? Are you inspiring people? Are you changing somebody's life? And I had that once, and I thought I would never have it again. And that was Zumba for me. Because remember, I said I was using Zumba to lose weight. So I was paying for my 24-hour fitness membership. So I was paying to do it because I loved doing it, and I would pay to go to master classes. I would pay to have that experience. And then all of a sudden now, I was being paid to be a Zumba instructor. And that just boggled my mind. So that was option, or that was, you know, check mark number A on my two-part checklist. And B, I was changing people's lives. I would have students who lost over 100 pounds, and then they would write me these notes and saying, oh my God, you know, I was so down and out because I'm so overweight, and now I enjoy life. I mean, just like the feeling that you can get when you know that you're not even doing anything special. Like, I'm just like sitting in front of a class dancing to music. But to know that that has that kind of effect on people's lives, I was just like, this is great. And then that kind of went away. I was like, you know what? I'm never going to have that again. But then Helium 10 comes along, and I wasn't looking for a job from Helium 10, but I actually was using Helium 10 for like over a year as a consultant. So I was paying to use Helium 10 because I needed this tool. This is a tool that I needed to run my business. And now all of a sudden, Helium 10 comes along and say, we would like to have you work for us. So I was like, wait a minute. Now I'm going to be paid to use what I love so much that I've been paying to use it until then. So that again, did my first checklist. And then my second thing was being able to, again, change people's lives. And then it's in a different way, but I'm receiving those same kind of messages. Oh my God, Bradley, you know, I watched the Project X series, and now I was able to quit my job because I'm making, you know, $20,000 a month on Amazon, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, I was homeless before, and, you know, now, you know, I actually can support my, I mean, like, I get a lot of these things. And so I was like, wow, lightning has struck twice by being able, but that's my main why. Like, try and get paid to do something that you love so much that you would pay to do it even if you weren't being paid. And number two, this is not necessary, but it's like kind of like icing on the cake, is try and do something that can make a positive difference in people's lives.
Oh, I love that, Bradley. That's amazing. Yes. So good for yourself and good for others. I love that.
Thanks.
So the next thing I love asking people is a piece of media, something we can consume, a book, a podcast, something else like that.
Something that was kind of internal here at Helium 10, but that I think Manny and Guy, the founders of Helium 10, again, that I was talking about, I think they might have learned about this book from War Room, which is from Digital Marketer. It was a high-end mastermind that they would attend, you know, once or twice a year. And there is this book that they really liked. And to me, that was when Helium 10 started really taking off, is when we incorporated this into our SOPs for all the different departments at Helium 10. And then it's something you can incorporate in your own life. And it was, I think it's called the Four Disciplines of Execution. I don't know who writes it, but it's called 40X. And it's like a method of how you can just go about things in your company, in your business, in your own weight loss journey, which is something I need to go on again. But they even give experiences about that is like, it's kind of like how you measure and set your goals. How do you gamify that whole process? And to me, that was just like a revelation as far as how you can really get a lot more out of any effort or out of anything that you're trying to put effort into. And so that would probably be the one book. Like, I'm not one of those, oh, I read a book every week kind of person. I mean, like when I was driving to work, I would just listen to my Audible Star Wars books, you know? So, but that would be one book that I would say changed my life as far as from a professional standpoint.
Is it the Four Disciplines of Execution?
That's it. Yep.
Ah, okay, cool. I will make sure to include in the show notes. I found it on
four or five.
Amazon.
It's like four or five. One of those things. Five, four. I'm pretty sure it's four. It's four. 4DX is like the abbreviation. I'm almost positive, unless my memory is fading.
Oh, 4DX. Oh, I thought it was like four. Yeah, 40. 4DX.
Yeah, 4DX. Four Disciplines of Executions. Yeah.
Perfect. Four Disciplines of Execution. It is by Chris McChesney.
That's the one.
And Sean Covey. And yep. Jim Poling. Yeah. So we will make sure I have a link to that in the show notes. And that sounds good. I've never read that one or even heard of it. So I'm going to put that in my must read list.
Yep.
Bradley, tell us, what is one actionable thing that Amazon sellers can do today?
I would have to say the best thing you could do. I mean, there's a billion, obviously, that I have. But the one thing that I constantly see people forgetting about, I can talk about it in a general sense and then a more focused one. And the general sense is sometimes as Amazon sellers, I see so many people just get too hung up with metrics and analytics and scores and Amazon A9 algorithm and this and that, all of which are very important. You know, you've got to understand search volume. You've got to understand what Amazon views as relevant and this and that. But what happens is because of tools like Helium 10, people get too laser focused on these kind of things. And then they forget about who is the most important thing, and that's the customer. And so at the end of the day, it's not the Amazon algorithm or Jeff Bezos that's buying your product. It's a customer. So don't get too hung up on there. And one of those things that people forget about is when they're doing their listing optimization, they're just thinking about search terms, keywords that are search terms. In other words, keywords that people are searching for. And again, that is absolutely very important. Might be the most important thing. Yes, you have to have your most important search terms in your listing so you can get indexed for it and so you show up in people when people search. But what people aren't doing enough is trying to make that emotional connection with their buyers. And one of the ways that's somewhat easier than it used to be like 5-6 years ago is by studying the reviews of your competitors or even your own reviews. And back in the day, before Helium 10 was around, what I would do, or actually Helium 10 was around, but they never had this functionality before, was I would pay a VA to go through my top competitors' reviews and like, hey, give me some common things that you see that are coming up. Because these are things that are keywords, but that are not search terms. They're things that people are thinking about when they buy the product. And then so what I use now is the Review Insights tool, which is part of our Chrome extension. And within a couple clicks of a button, I can see what are the top things or the top phrases that people in the reviews of a certain listing are saying. And the classic example I always use is like, you look at any collagen peptides product, I don't care which one it is, the very top thing that shows up in every single collagen peptides product in the reviews is the phrase "in my coffee." And that's not a search term. Nobody types into an Amazon search term "in my coffee" thinking that they're going to get collagen peptides. No, they type in hydrolyzed collagen peptides, collagen powder, whatever. Those are search terms. But that's what they're thinking about because that's what people are using collagen peptides for, which, you know, unless you're a collagen expert, you might not have even known that. So how you use that is now in my imagery, I'm going to make sure I'm going to show somebody drinking some coffee or they're pouring collagen peptides into some coffee. I'm going to make sure that's in my bullet points. And again, if you're only focused on the metrics or search volume or relevancy or things like that, you would never have had that. And you're going to be behind your competitors who are going to that next level and making sure they understand their target market. So that would be, I think, something that would do any Amazon seller of any good to try and focus more on your buyers as opposed to the metrics.
Yes. I love that. Love that. We always say we want 80% of our stuff automated and kind of like computer led, data led.
Yeah.
But 20% needs to be that human component, the decision making, right, and then also the emotional components that need to be there. So I love that tip. Make sure that you use the data, but then you do need to read. You do need to understand what the customer is wanting. I love that, Bradley.
Yep.
All right. Let the audience know how they can get a hold of you or how they can hear more from you.
Yeah. Well, we do 2 episodes a week on the Serious Sellers podcast. That's Sellers with an S. Sometimes people always think it's Serious Seller podcast. No, Serious Sellers podcast. Seller.
There's one serious guy. No,
there's only one serious seller out there. You know, I'm just talking to myself every episode. No, I always have a lot of great guests. You know, you're definitely on one of those the episodes that is coming up. I'm not sure which number it is yet, but I always try and invite people of all walks of life, not just quote unquote experts like yourself. But you know, I love interviewing the average Joes and Sallys of the world who have interesting stories. So guys, if you want some inspiration, definitely take a listen to the podcast. I also give some content every now and then on my business Instagram, which is H10Bradley. And I'm on the same handle also. I try and go as much as I can on Clubhouse, H10Bradley. So those are the best ways to find me out there.
Awesome, Bradley. Thanks so much. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.